Chapter 98 comprises certain particulars arising out of a visit of condolence, which may prove important hereafter. Smike unexpectedly encounters a very old friend, who invites him to his house, and will take no denial, quite unconscious of the demonstrations of their amorous neighbor, or their effects upon the susceptible bosom of her mama. Kate Nickleby had, by this time, begun to enjoy a settled feeling of tranquility and happiness, to which, even in occasional and transitory glimpses, she had long been a stranger. Living under the same roof with the beloved brother from whom she had been so suddenly and hardly separated. With a mind at ease, and free from any persecutions which could call a blush into her cheek, or a pang into her heart, she seemed to have passed into a new state of being. Her former cheerfulness was restored, her step regained its elasticity and lightness, the color which had forsaken her cheek visited it once again, and Kate Nickleby looked more beautiful than ever. Such was the result to which Miss La Creevy's ruminations and observations led her, when the cottage had been, as she emphatically said, thoroughly got to rights, from the chimney pots to the street door scraper, apostrophe and the busy little woman had at length a moment's time to think about its inmates. Which I declare I haven't had, since I first came down here, apostrophe said Miss La Creevy. For I have thought of nothing but hammers, nails, screwdrivers, and gimlets, morning, noon, and night. Apostrophe, you never bestowed one thought upon yourself, I believe, apostrophe returned Kate, smiling. Upon my word, my dear, when there are so many pleasanter things to think of, I should be a goose if I did, apostrophe said Miss La Creevy. By the by, I have thought of somebody too. Do you know, that I observe a great change in one of this family, a very extraordinary change? Apostrophe apostrophe, in whom? Apostrophe apostrophe asked Kate, anxiously. Not in apostrophe, not in your brother, my dear, apostrophe returned Miss La Creevy, anticipating the close of the sentence, for he is always the same affectionate, good-natured, clever creature, with a spice of the I won't say who in him when there's any occasion, that he was when I first knew you. No. Smike, as he will be called, poor fellow, for he won't hear of a mister before his name, is greatly altered, even in this short time. Apostrophe, how? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Kate. Not in health? Apostrophe, NNO, perhaps not in health exactly, apostrophe said Miss La Creevy, pausing to consider, although he is a worn and feeble creature, and has that in his face which it would wring my heart to see in yours. No, not in health. Apostrophe, how then? Apostrophe apostrophe, I scarcely know, apostrophe said the miniature painter. But I have watched him, and he has brought the tears into my eyes many times. It is not a very difficult matter to do that, certainly, for I am easily melted. Still I think these came with good cause and reason. I am sure, that since he has been here, he has grown, from some strong cause, more conscious of his weak intellect. He feels it more. It gives him greater pain, to know that he wanders sometimes, and cannot understand very simple things. I have watched him, when you have not been by, my dear, sit brooding by himself, with such a look of pain as I could scarcely bear to see, and then get up and leave the room. So sorrowfully, and in such dejection, that I cannot tell you, how it has hurt me. Not 3 weeks ago, he was a light-hearted busy creature, overjoyed to be in a bustle, and as happy as the day was long. Now, he is another being, the same willing, harmless, faithful, loving creature but the same in nothing else. Apostrophe, surely this will all pass off, apostrophe said Kate. Poor fellow. Apostrophe, I hope, apostrophe returned her little friend, with a gravity very unusual in her, it may. I hope, for the sake of that poor lad, it may. However, apostrophe said Miss La Creevy, relapsing into the cheerful, chattering tone, which was habitual to her, I have said my say, and a very long say it is, and a very wrong say too, I shouldn't wonder at all. I shall cheer him up tonight, at all events, for if he is to be my squire all the way to the Strand, I shall talk on, and on, and on, and never leave off, till I have roused him into a laugh at something. So the sooner he goes, the better for him, and the sooner I go, the better for me, I am sure, or else I shall have my maid gallivanting with somebody who may rob the house, though what there is to take away, besides tables and chairs, I don't know, except the miniatures. And he is a clever thief who can dispose of them to any great advantage, for I can't, I know, and that's the honest truth. Apostrophe, so saying, little Miss La Creevy hid her face in a very flat bonnet, and herself in a very big shawl, and fixing herself tightly into the latter, by means of a large pin, declared that the omnibus might come, as soon as it pleased, for she was quite ready. But there was still Mrs. Nickleby to take leave of, and long before that good lady had concluded some reminiscences bearing upon, and appropriate to, the occasion, the omnibus arrived. This put Miss La Creevy in a great bustle, in consequence whereof, as she secretly rewarded the servant girl with 18 pence behind the street door, she pulled out of her reticule 10 pennyworth of halfpence, which rolled into all possible corners of the passage, and occupied some considerable time in the picking up. This ceremony had, of course, to be succeeded by a second kissing of Kate and Mrs. Nickleby, and a gathering together of the little basket and the brown paper parcel, during which proceedings, the omnibus, apostrophe as Miss La Creevy protested, swore so dreadfully, that it was quite awful to hear it. Apostrophe at length and at last, it made a feint of going away, and then Miss La Creevy darted out, and darted in, apologizing with great volubility to all the passengers, and declaring that she wouldn't purposely have kept them waiting on any account whatever. While she was looking about for a convenient seat, the conductor pushed Smike in, and cried that it was all right though it wasn't, and away went the huge vehicle, with the noise of half a dozen brewer's drays at least, leaving it to pursue its journey at the pleasure of the conductor aforementioned, who lounged gracefully on his little shelf behind, smoking an odoriferous cigar, and leaving it to stop, or go on, or gallop, or crawl, as that gentleman deemed expedient and advisable. This narrative may embrace the opportunity of ascertaining the condition of Sir Mulberry Hawk, and to what extent he had, by this time, recovered from the injuries consequent on being flung violently from his cabriolet, under the circumstances already detailed. With a shattered limb, a body severely bruised, a face disfigured by half-healed scars, and pallid from the exhaustion of recent pain and fever, Sir Mulberry Hawk lay stretched upon his back, on the couch to which he was doomed to be a prisoner for some weeks yet to come. Mr. Pike and Mr. Pluck sat drinking hard in the next room, now and then varying the monotonous murmurs of their conversation with a half-smothered laugh, while the young lord, the only member of the party who was not thoroughly irredeemable, and who really had a kind heart, sat beside his mentor, with a cigar in his mouth, and read to him, by the light of a lamp, such scraps of intelligence from a paper of the day, as were most likely to yield him interest or amusement. "Curse those hounds!" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," said the invalid, turning his head impatiently towards the adjoining room. "Will nothing stop their infernal throats?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," Messrs. Pike and Pluck heard the exclamation, and stopped immediately, winking to each other as they did so, and filling their glasses to the brim, as some recompense for the deprivation of speech. "Damn!" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," muttered the sick man between his teeth, and writhing impatiently in his bed. "Isn't this mattress hard enough, and the room dull enough, and pain bad enough, but they must torture me? What's the time?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, 8:30, apostrophe," replied his friend. "Here, draw the table nearer, and let us have the cards again, apostrophe," said Sir Mulberry. "More picket. Come." Apostrophe, it was curious, to see how eagerly the sick man, debarred from any change of position save the mere turning of his head from side to side, watched every motion of his friend in the progress of the game, and with what eagerness and interest he played, and yet how warily and coolly. His address and skill were more than 20 times a match for his adversary, who could make little head against them, even when fortune favored him with good cards, which was not often the case. Sir Mulberry won every game, and when his companion threw down the cards, and refused to play any longer, thrust forth his wasted arm and caught up the stakes with a boastful oath, and the same hoarse laugh, though considerably lowered in tone, that had resounded in Ralph Nickleby's dining room, months before. While he was thus occupied, his man appeared, to announce that Mr. Ralph Nickleby was below, and wished to know how he was, tonight. Better, apostrophe said Sir Mulberry, impatiently. Mr. Nickleby wishes to know, sir apostrophe, I tell you, better, apostrophe replied Sir Mulberry, striking his hand upon the table. The man hesitated for a moment or two, and then said that Mr. Nickleby had requested permission to see Sir Mulberry Hawk, if it was not inconvenient. It is inconvenient. I can't see him. I can't see anybody, apostrophe said his master, more violently than before. You know that, you blockhead. Apostrophe, I am very sorry, sir, apostrophe returned the man. But Mr. Nickleby pressed so much, sir apostrophe, the fact was, that Ralph Nickleby had bribed the man, who, being anxious to earn his money with a view to future favors, held the door in his hand, and ventured to linger still. Did he say, whether he had any business to speak about? Apostrophe apostrophe inquired Sir Mulberry, after a little impatient consideration. No, sir. He said he wished to see you, sir. Particularly, Mr. Nickleby said, sir. Apostrophe, tell him to come up. Here, apostrophe cried Sir Mulberry, calling the man back, as he passed his hand over his disfigured face, move that lamp, and put it on the stand behind me. Wheel that table away, and place a chair there further off. Leave it so. Apostrophe, the man obeyed these directions, as if he quite comprehended the motive with which they were dictated, and left the room. Lord Frederick Verisopht, remarking that he would look in presently, strolled into the adjoining apartment, and closed the folding door behind him. Then was heard a subdued footstep on the stairs, and Ralph Nickleby, hat in hand, crept softly into the room, with his body bent forward, as if in profound respect, and his eyes fixed upon the face of his worthy client. Well, Nickleby, apostrophe said Sir Mulberry, motioning him to the chair by the couch side, and waving his hand in assumed carelessness, I have had a bad accident, you see. Apostrophe, I see, apostrophe rejoined Ralph, with the same steady gaze. Bad, indeed. I should not have known you, Sir Mulberry. Dear, dear. This is bad. Apostrophe, Ralph's manner was one of profound humility and respect, and the low tone of voice was that which the gentlest consideration for a sick man would have taught a visitor to assume. But the expression of his face, Sir Mulberry's being averted, was in extraordinary contrast, and as he stood, in his usual attitude, calmly looking on the prostrate form before him, all that part of his features which was not cast into shadow by his protruding and contracted brows, bore the impress of a sarcastic smile. Sit down, apostrophe said Sir Mulberry, turning towards him, as though by a violent effort. Am I a sight, that you stand gazing there? Apostrophe, as he turned his face, Ralph recoiled a step or two, and making as though he were irresistibly impelled to express astonishment, but was determined not to do so, sat down with well-acted confusion. I have inquired at the door, Sir Mulberry, every day, apostrophe said Ralph, twice a day, indeed, at first and tonight, presuming upon old acquaintance, and past transactions by which we have mutually benefited in some degree, I could not resist soliciting admission to your chamber. Have you suffered much? Apostrophe said Ralph, bending forward, and allowing the same harsh smile to gather upon his face, as the other closed his eyes. More than enough to please me, and less than enough to please some broken down hacks that you and I know of, and to lay their ruin between us, I dare say, apostrophe returned Sir Mulberry, tossing his arm restlessly upon the coverlet. Ralph shrugged his shoulders in deprecation of the intense irritation with which this had been said, for there was an aggravating, cold distinctness in his speech and manner which so grated on the sick man that he could scarcely endure it. And what is it in these past transactions that brought you here tonight? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Sir Mulberry. Nothing, apostrophe, replied Ralph. There are some bills of my lord's which need renewal, but let them be till you are well. I came, apostrophe, said Ralph, speaking more slowly and with harsher emphasis. I came to say how grieved I am that any relative of mine, although disowned by me, should have inflicted such punishment on you as apostrophe, punishment. Apostrophe, apostrophe, interposed Sir Mulberry. I know it has been a severe one, apostrophe, said Ralph, willfully mistaking the meaning of the interruption, and that has made me the more anxious to tell you that I disown this vagabond, that I acknowledge him as no kin of mine, and that I leave him to take his deserts from you, and every man besides. You may wring his neck if you please. I shall not interfere. Apostrophe, this story that they tell me here has got abroad then, has it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Sir Mulberry, clenching his hands and teeth. Noised in all directions, apostrophe, replied Ralph. Every club and gaming room has run with it. There has been a good song made about it, as I am told, apostrophe, said Ralph, looking eagerly at his questioner. I have not heard it myself, not being in the way of such things, but I have been told it's even printed for private circulation. But that's all over town, of course. Apostrophe, it's a lie. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Sir Mulberry. I tell you it's all a lie. The mayor took fright. Apostrophe, they say he frightened her, apostrophe, observed Ralph, in the same unmoved and quiet manner. Some say he frightened you, but that's a lie, I know. I have said that boldly, oh, a score of times. I am a Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.